Good morning, everyone. The sitting is open. I have received from the Council its position at first reading regarding the compulsory licensing of patents in crisis situations. I've also received the reasons which led to its adoption and the position and opinion of the Commission. The full title will be published in the minutes of today's sitting. The three-month period available to Parliament to adopt its position begins tomorrow, 14th November. The next item on the agenda is European Council and Commission statements, conclusions of the European Council meeting of the 23rd October 2025. Before opening the debate, I would like to inform you that President Costa is indisposed and will not be present today. So I'll start by giving the floor to the President of the Commission, Ursula von der Leyen.
Thank you very much, Madam President, dear Roberta, honourable members. I want to begin with a topic that was central both to our discussions at the European Council and to last week's COP30 in Brazil, that is competitiveness and decarbonisation. And from Brussels to Belém, the message was very clear the same. We must accelerate the clean transition, but also use it to drive growth and prosperity. And this was at the heart of the discussions we had at the European Council. The work to decarbonize goes hand in hand with the work for our competitiveness. So the goal is very clear. We keep a close eye on it. And the way towards this, on the way towards it, we have to be fast and flexible, pragmatic and adaptable. This year marks a full decade since the Paris Agreement, and there are, of course, still many reasons to be deeply concerned. Nature reminds us daily of the cost of inaction, the extreme weather events, but there is also progress to recognize. Just two numbers. 10 years ago, we were heading towards a temperature rise by the end of the century of 4 degrees Celsius. Today, we are closer to 2.4 degrees Celsius. This is still too high, but for the very first time in modern history, the curve is bending. And that shows and proves our ability to change things for the better if we are active. Take carbon pricing, for example. Since we introduced our emission trading system, emissions have fallen by 50%. The growth of GDP was 27%, and we have gotten 250 billion euros from the ETS system to be reinvented in clean technologies, in research and innovation. So the principle is here very clear. If you pollute, you pay. If you don't want to pay, you innovate. And the result is also clear. Decarbonization and innovation go hand in hand. The same is true for energy. The vast bulk of emission reduction over the last decade has come from the cleaning up of the global energy sources. Just a figure, this year, 95% of new energy capacity worldwide was renewables, 95%. And the reason is simple. Renewables are now not only cleaner, but they are cheaper as well. So they have by now a compelling business case. Let's look again back to Paris Agreement 10 years ago. A total of $2 trillion were invested in global energy at that time. It was $1 trillion in fossil fuels and $1 trillion in renewables. Today, 10 years later, a total of $3 trillion is invested in energy globally, still $1 trillion in fossil fuels, but by now $2 trillion. In renewable energy. So this is a profound shift, and it can represent a vast opportunity for Europe. How we seize this opportunity, that was a central theme of our discussions at the European Council. Honourable members, too high energy prices are the main brake to competitiveness in Europe. So energy was a centre point, but of course it was not the only point of discussions on competitiveness. And as the Draghi report outlined, competitiveness depends on investment and it depends on scale here in Europe. And that is why the European Council also discussed how to address the other hurdles we have in our competitiveness. The need for innovation, for example. That is why we're launching Choose Europe and the Scale Up Europe Fund. Or the lack of deep and liquid capital markets. That is why we are advancing the Savings and Investment Union. The gap we have in adopting artificial intelligence. That is why we deliver on our AI first strategy. Or that is the reason why we're building the gigafactories. Or take the fragmentation of our single market. That is why we propose the 28th regime for innovative companies. So many important topics. All this is vital, all this is urgent. And that is why I very much welcome the initiative by the President of the European Council to have an informal European Council on competitiveness in February. We have so much potential, we just have to unleash it. And this requires a shared sense of urgency and all hands on deck. Honourable members, the second main topic I want to emphasise from the European Council was our support to Ukraine. And in the last 2 weeks, it has become even more urgent. Russia has again intensified its attacks targeting all Ukraine's energy sources at once. In just one day last week, Russia launched more than 40 ballistic missiles and cruise missiles and almost 500 drones targeting Ukraine's energy infrastructure. Two major power plants were destroyed. So having failed to make progress on the battlefield, President Putin is again trying to terrorize the Ukrainian people to use winter as a weapon to freeze Ukraine into submission. Once again, he must fail, and Europe will continue to empower Ukraine's resistance. We are repairing, for example, the damage done by Russian strikes. We are stabilizing Ukraine's energy grid with over 2 gigawatts of electricity exports from the Union to Ukraine, and we are protecting critical infrastructure, for example, with new anti-drone equipment. So this winter will shape the future of the war, and our response must rise to the challenge. Honourable members, we all want this war to end. But a lasting peace relies on a strong and independent Ukraine. And today Putin thinks he can outlast us. He still thinks that over time, Russia can achieve its aim on the battlefield. And this is a clear miscalculation. Now is therefore the moment to come with a new impetus to unmask Putin's cynical attempt to buy time and bring him to the negotiation table. We must continue to raise the cost of war for Russia, also because the scars are becoming more and more obvious and visible in the Russian economy by now. And this is why we will disburse today almost 6 billion euros from the ERA loan and the Ukraine facility to Ukraine. And this is why I very much welcome the European Council's very clear commitment in the last meeting to cover Ukraine's financial needs for the next 2 years, 2026, 2027. This is the reason why we are now working very closely with Belgium and all the member states on options how to deliver on this commitment. It's clear we will deliver and we will cover the financial needs of Ukraine for the next 2 years. The discussion is now on the how. And there are 3 options. Option one is to use the budget's headroom to raise money on the capital markets. Option two is to have an intergovernmental agreement that member states raise the necessary capital by themselves. And option three is to have a reparations loan. This is based on immobilized Russian asset. So this would mean take the cash balances from the immobilized Russian assets, hand them as a loan to Ukraine, and Ukraine has to pay back this loan if Russia pays back reparations. This is the most effective way to sustain Ukraine's defense and its economy. And it's the clearest way to make Russia understand that time is not on their side. We will show that if needed, we are in this for the long haul, because this is about our freedom, it's about our democracies, it's about the rules-based order, and Europe will always stand by these values. Thank you very much, and long live Europe.
Thank you very, very much, Commission President. And now we go to the